I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and this week try to answer some more of your questions.
What's that Nissan people carry a version of a Primera?
People carry a version of a Primera?
Yeah, I'm sure it was a Primera. No, an Almera.
The Almera Tino.
Almera Tino. That's exactly what it was. Again, sounds like Italian cabaret act, doesn't it?
Oh, my God. The tightness of the white trousers sported by Almera Tino.
Oh, Almera Tino. Absolute player of women of a certain age. He just drags them in like a boat with a dragnet.
I think Almera Tino, though, is all one word. That's his first name. His full name is like Almera Tino Bumpensera. And you go, oh, right, okay. But for the stage, I just got Almera Tino.
Almera Tino. He's a good boy. He's very practical. Very capacious. He's got, yeah, despite having very tight trousers, has lots of pockets in his waistcoat. Cubbies.
Unexpected compartment.
Yeah. I love that. I love it.
For stuff.
Do you know something? I love learning about vehicles that I didn't know about. And today... Mm-hmm. I've learnt about a vehicle that just has me giggling. It constantly has me giggling. According to, I'm going to name check them on, from Instagram, Silodrome.
Oh, yes, I've seen that.
Yeah, Silodrome today. Good, they're good. They're a really cool like car culture type magazine. Mm. They did a post of the 1990 Mazda suitcase car concept.
What?
Have you ever heard of the suitcase car? Oh my gosh! Because I just thought it was a joke. I thought this is definitely not real.
I'm going to look this up while you're talking.
It is brilliant. So I just immediately went, "Oh come on, this can't be real. I just don't believe it's real." Well, it's real. In 1990, this is when Mazda were at peak creativity.
Yeah.
They made the amazing suitcase car for an event in 1991 called the Fantasy Yard.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Where a group of employees could come up with the most creative, innovative ways of producing a moving machine, in inverted commas. I'm doing finger thingies as I'm saying it. And basically, they bought a really large... they bought the largest Samsonite suitcase that you could buy. Mm. And then... dismantled it and then built inside it what looks like a mashup of a mini moto and a cart, like a cart back axle. So you sat in an open suitcase, and then it had wheels and a small seat and bars, and you could ride it, a suitcase, to work or it's brilliant.
Bloody, I wish I'd seen this like 3 or 4 years ago, because for the second series of the Grand Tour, we were asked by Amazon if we could get celebrities on, you know, as guests, which we hadn't done in the first series.
Yeah.
And our executive producer, Andy Willman, said, I think rather than have a car that they have to lap around a track, which is going to be difficult. At that point, we're still planning to be in a different location every week. We should just mark out a little course. It's always the same in a car park or whatever next to the tent, wherever we are in the world. And we need a little machine to go around it. And what if it was a suitcase that you could drive, and then we can claim, you know, we've had to pack it in the hold to get it here to whichever part of the world we're going to be in. The whole thing got dropped when we decided just to stick the tent in a field in Oxfordshire and bugger all the travelling around the world. But I went so far as to speak to some engineers about how this would be possible, and I even spoke to the guy at Ariel, Simon Saunders, who's the man, Mr. Ariel.
He is.
I said, look, you know, is there a way that you could, like, make an atom really small so it would sort of fold into a suitcase? And he went, basically, no. Because there's not a lot of spare space on an atom as it is. You could saw the nose off so that your feet were the forwardmost extremity.
Ooh.
And you could probably trim a bit off the back. But fundamentally, because of the way that you sit in an atom, which is essentially, you know, quite legs out
yeah.
your feet about level with your bum, you cannot squish it much. And so it was on a bit of a hiding to nothing. Although he promised he would sort of do some more maths if we were serious, and then
we'd have to spend a year of R&D doing it, probably.
I know, exactly. So, I was yeah. like, well, we were going to pay him for it, obviously, but it never came to that. But I wish I'd seen this bloody suitcase.
I wish you'd like phoned me, because I could have actually answered the question without knowing about the Mazda suitcase car, which is my new favourite thing, especially when I look up the history and it says that it was 33.6 cc, 1.7 horsepower, two-stroke suitcase with 4 6-inch tyres. And this is the best bit. The rear wheels could be slotted into the outside of the case while the front wheel would pop through a removable hatch in the front of the case. It took 1 minute to assemble, a top speed of 30 kilometres an hour. And while the original prototype was accidentally destroyed just a few months after the Fantasy Yard event. What do you mean, accidentally destroyed? What? I reckon one of the employees of Mazda just got right on it on the Saki and just battered it into like a ditch or a pond, into a pond, what? And it sunk. And they were shit, it's gone.
Nothing's accidentally destroyed. I mean, the pairing of accidentally destroyed is a funny word. It's like, where's the wedding cake? I'm afraid it was accidentally destroyed.
So it was accidentally destroyed a couple of months after the event. But one suitcase car still remains in existence, and it works as it did 24 odd years ago.
Heavens above.
So Mazda still, or if you're American, Mazda. They still have an amazing suitcase car. And this is great because I can add this to my mental archive of knowing about my favourite motorbike in existence, which is called the Valmobile, V-A-L, like a woman's name. The Valmobile. You need to look that up. It's a wonderful motorcycle which folds out of a metal suitcase. And it was specifically designed to go on trains and on light aircraft in the 50s. It's very old, very, very old.
Jeez.
Yeah, you know I've got an obsession with motorcycles that can fit in the boot of cars and things. But this was like, this is like the godfather of the Moto Compo from Honda.
And it's
called the Valmobile, and it's Valmobile bastard rare.
Fold-away scooter.
Oh, and it's just great. It's
they
great.
They have one. And
I want one.
I see they have Valmobile. One in the Lane Motor Museum in the US.
Have you seen
No, I haven't. I've never been to the Lane Motor Museum. It's just that I know it's a place that has a lot of quirky shit.
Okay, it's a place I need to go as soon as I'm allowed to travel. By the sounds of it,
yeah. Well, it's in Nashville.
Oh my gosh. Well, Tennessee is on my list of places to go to as soon as I'm allowed, because I've got people to see there and things to do there.
Yeah, well, because funny.
Well, I've never been.
As I was saying about the Grand Tour, well, that's one of the places we went in the first series of the Grand Tour. We went to Nashville to do a show there, and it was some of the most fun I've ever had on a filming trip. It was brilliant for lots of reasons. Yeah, really good fun. Just a great town. We had a lovely time there. Brilliant time.
I want to go there. Can we go there? I'll borrow a Valmobile, and then you can borrow Mazda's suitcase car, and we can have one of the slowest, most potentially dangerous, very small road trips. Should we do it?
It's a very big place. It'll take us forever to get.
Well, let's just circumnavigate Nashville over the course of a week.
There's that main strip. I can't remember what it's called, where all the bars are, where they've all got bands on and stuff. That's not that long. You keep just going up and down there. On a Valmobile.
On a Valmobile and an amazing suitcase car. I love that. You have to use the term amazing. So if someone goes, "What's this?" You go, "Oh, this. It's an amazing suitcase car." Is it? Okay.
Got distracted by the Lane Motor Museum website now, which I just go and have a look at that if you're bored.
I love museums.
Well, it depends what they've got, doesn't it?
Well, sometimes they're boring, but these days they can't be because they don't stay in business. And they're not really a business. They're a charity, but you know what I mean. But
hard. I know what you mean, because some of them, they go to town and they go, "Oh, look, we've got interactive displays and all the curation has been made, much more whizzy and popular and easy to read and everything. But if you are like, you know, that pencil museum in Cumbria, I don't really know how you sex up pencils except to
you bloody don't, Rich. There's a creepy one up my way around here called a doll museum. I've seen the signs for it. I've never dared go near it. Imagine sleeping the night in a doll museum. I mean, seriously.
Did I tell you about the two grotesque teddy bears we found in the loft of my parents' old house? I mean, we knew they were there in as much as they were sort of like they'd belong to ancient relatives.
They were grotesque,
right? You know, before they figured out how to make teddy bears. Sort of
cuddly. You did tell me. Aren't they
hard carcass, mangy? One of them had got an eye missing. Grotesque is the word. They were horrible. Pair of uncuddly, mangy, bits missing bears. Totally unappealing.
They're like salvage yard bears.
They were like, they were cat-ass bears. And when we moved out of that house and my dad was moving into somewhere much smaller, we needed to get rid of a load of stuff. And so we got a guy in who was an expert in old shit. And I was thinking, oh, you know, there's a bureau in the corner there. About that's worth a few quid. No, £20. Is it like my grandmother's old tea set? Maybe that's worth something. No, £10. Oh, it's like, oh. Well, there you go. It's the cash in the attic thing where you go, oh, have you got any cash in your attic? No. So they haven't. But we fucking did, because two, and I'm going to say it again, grotesquely horrible Victorian teddy bears together were worth £800.
£800?
Yeah, they were because people are really into, like, Victorian toys, apparently, and that's probably why the doll museum exists.
But Victorian stuff,
horrors.
Yeah, because Victorian stuff's just it's not warm and friendly, is it? It's
Victorian, isn't it? It's very starchy and
yeah.
They didn't have sort of talking dolls in those days, did they?
Oh gosh,
because the technology. But imagine a talking Victorian doll. You'd pull a string out, and it would just go, "I have a lot of respect for you."
Yeah.
Hello. Shall we be acquaintances? Would you like to shake my hand?
No, I bloody wouldn't. No, I'm not going to the doll. I'm not going to a doll museum. I'm digging car museums, and I like general transport. There's a great tram museum in the Peak District. That's cool. But no, yeah. I'm not doing dolls. Absolutely.
Oh, have you ever
way.
Been to the De Havilland Museum, which is just outside London? It's fantastically old school museum, where it's basically just a load of old things have been thrown into a series of sheds and outdoors. It's great.
It sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Can we go one day?
Yeah, I'll take you there. It's not far from me, actually.
How far is it on a Valmobile and an amazing suitcase car?
Couple of weeks. But in a car, it would take you about 20 minutes.
Oh, man. Oh, dear. I did that thing that I often do, and I think I've mentioned it on a previous podcast. I was coming back from a shoot quite late, had the heated seats on. It was a miserable night. Put a bit of magic radio on. Smooth radio, I think it was. Yeah, and they played Tracy Chapman, Fast Car, which I like. It hasn't aged, that song. You'd never know that was 80s, 70s, 60s, 90s, whatever. You just wouldn't know.
I tell you what, though, that's one of those songs in the subset of songs that make you wait for the good bit.
Yes.
Because it's got a wonderful chorus melody, but she makes you wait for it. You think it's coming. And she sort of double verses, or maybe even triple verses, and you're like, come on, Tracy, just do the good bit.
She's good, and it's a very loaded song, emotionally
Isn't
loaded.
It? Yeah, oh God, yeah.
So I do like it. On the other hand, last week when I was listening to this driving back from this job in the driving rain with my heated seat, and I was thinking, yeah, but Tracy, what fast car has he got? Like, you know, okay, look, beggars can't be choosers. You need to get out of town. You know, you're in a desperate situation. You'll take anything, Mariva VXR, whatever. But listen, what has he got? What do we think the fast car is? I'd love to know.
I mean, obviously it's set in America, isn't it?
Yeah. And it was 80s.
Yes.
Wasn't it? Mid-80s song? Like,
actual answer, because I've always in my head had an image in my head of what that car was. I always thought it was like a late 60s muscle car.
Yeah. So peak muscle car
era. Convertible
era.
One. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But it's a bit shabby because it's the 80s.
So like a Buick Skylark with a big block in it or something, or a Challenger or a...
Yes, a Challenger. I think that's what I'm picturing, a Challenger convertible. Yeah. Which obviously now would be extremely valuable, but...
Yeah, it'd be like 200 grand if it was a big block.
But when it was just absolutely grotty and it's only sort of... Well, it would have been mid-80s, so like, you know, sort of...
It'd have been Rust Belt spec, so it would have been a bit frilly around the bottoms of the doors. Front wing a bit crinkled, you know, leaky.
Oh, very leaky, yeah.
But I think it's probably gets driven similar to the way Nick Nolte drives that Cadillac in 48 Hours, which is what we talked about a few months back. Did you ever watch it after I asked you to watch it?
No, because I can't bear it.
Oh my God.
You warned me that he keeps putting it into park when it's still moving.
Oh, it's
he puts it through me.
He puts it into park when it's probably still doing 15 miles an hour.
Oh, hey, you know, you were saying the other week about a delivery van... kind of shut down on the move, like a pilot shutting the engines off on a plane and just gliding it.
Oh, gliding, putting the handbrake on three clicks and just letting it kind of coast in.
I saw an epic one 2 days ago. Amazon bloke in a Vivaro, and
of course,
yeah,
he would.
I swear to God, he was still doing 20 miles an hour when the engine shut off, and it was definitely still moving as it felt like
the
door
in the back.
Was opening and he was getting out.
if it had no bulkhead, he'd knocked it into neutral, killed the engine, and put the handbrake on three clicks. Already run into the back to sift through the parcels. The thing's just on a set crash course. He's obviously just looked at the road and gone, I reckon it'll go down there. It'll go between those two cars. It'll be fine. Yeah, it's like proper, like, you know, like Russian roulette cruise control, isn't it? I love it. I love those guys. They know, those guys and women who drive delivery vans all day, every day, like hard, they know their vehicle. They know it.
Well, they know it, but they don't have any particular respect for it, do they?
Oh, they don't care about it.
Even by the standards of people who have to drive a van for work or any kind of car that's just a work tool, they are really treating it like a tool.
Oh, yes.
It's a device that gets you around. Oh, my God, you know what happened to me this morning as well? Sorry, just this is just reminding me. I got an Uber across town and...
of course you did.
Uber roulette is always interesting, and usually it's a Prius, but no, this morning... Mercedes E-Class. I was like, okay, that's nice. New shape as well, you know, current shape. So
wow,
that's
a serious Uber.
Yeah, comfy in the back, nice ride, lovely. But the guy, because those E-Classes, you know, they've got the gear selector on the automatic gearbox is a column stalk. So
that's right.
It's on the door side in a right-hand drive car, so you can't see what he's doing. But we stopped across a side turning. And someone came along and wanted to turn into it while we were stuck in traffic. And the bloke, the driver of my Uber, clearly realised he had a bit of space behind him, so he stuck it in reverse, crept backwards, made enough space for someone to turn through. All very good, good, considerate driving. And generally, his driving was really good. But then we sat in traffic for a bit longer, and then the lights up ahead changed, and the person in front dithered a bit and then set off. And obviously, at that point, you know, Uber drivers particularly, they just want to get the job done. So... he mashed it quite aggressively, but he'd forgotten that he was still in reverse. And so we surged backwards. And thank fuck, we just stopped short of the car behind us. And the bloke was obviously really embarrassed, but rather than sort of go, oh, sorry about that, or anything like that, he just went, put it into drive and then just carried on. I was like, was that an apology cop?
Was he
are you clearing your throat? It was really weird, but yeah, we were fucking close to smashing into the car behind.
In a brand
I quite enjoyed
new
it, if I'm honest. I was trying to remember the last time I saw someone in a gear selection mishap, and and it's been a while.
That's that. There's your John Peel band right there.
This week's John Peel band is, of course, yeah, live in session later on. It's Gear Selection Mishap. I once saw a bloke. I did some filming with a guy who was a designer from Land Rover years ago, and he turned up in this one-off Freelander with flip paintwork on it, which wasn't offered in showrooms, but it was something they were experimenting with. And the director went, "Oh, we'd love to have that in the background while we're talking to you." And so this guy was manoeuvring it about, and then he backed up, and then he wanted to go forward down a slope. So he backed up, and then he just started coasting down the slope. And I was standing at the top of the slope, and as he went past me, I saw the reversing lights were still on. And I thought, oh, he's now coasting forward, but the car is still in reverse. He's got the clutch in. Uh-oh, no. And I sort of started jogging alongside trying to tell him. And it was too late. As the car got towards the bottom of the ramp, he obviously thought, oh, well, I'll need a bit more speed now. And he let the clutch out. And there was the most almighty noise. Oh, my goodness. It was grinding. There was grinding.
I love talking to you because I never know what we're going to get. It's like it's a lucky dip.
That's all the gear selection mishaps that I have at the moment. I embarked on this avenue without really thinking it through.
When's the last time you bump started a car?
Oh my God. Honestly can't remember.
Oh, it's great. I mean,
when was the last time you bump started a car?
I used to do it quite regularly when I had my Honda Insight of all cars.
What?
Well, because you know my Honda Insight had an astronomic mileage on it.
Hmm.
Well, sometimes it used to throw up the IMA warning light, the integrated motor assist, which is the hybrid thing.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't go away without me taking it to a dealer. But one day I realised I could fool it. And what I used to do, and I don't recommend this to people at home, is I'd go to a very quiet lane near where I live that's dead straight, and I'd have to drive along, so I had to start the car on the starter motor because it wouldn't use the normal kind of alternative quiet start method that it uses. So I started it on the with the conventional starter motor, drove it along, then immediately went onto this straight road, knocked it into neutral, turned the ignition off, so killed the engine, turned the ignition back on, and then bump started in second or third, and then it started the engine, of course, and it reset its entire brain, and it used to totally forget that it had thrown any warning signs up. I used to do it every couple of months. Because of course it wasn't a plug-in hybrid, so if the battery got really low it was starting to get unhappy, which is why a lot of people convert them to plug-in hybrid. It's the easiest, quickest conversion. Is about £250, but
is it?
Yeah, yeah. There's a guy that does it in the London area who specializes in it, and it really saves the battery on those, and it makes it a more efficient car too. But
interesting.
Of course, that was the early days of hybrid. I was going to
look on Twitter because I asked if anyone had anything they wanted to cover in this show. Did. I've opened up Twitter and the.
Is it Pandora's box?
Well, it's a bit. And someone here, Neil McMillan, hello Neil, I bought an Astra estate from a musician who sold Terry Nutkins a Subaru Impreza for his son earlier the same day. The Impreza belonged to the musician's flatmate. True story.
Hang on, just going to have to rewind that. Hang on. So,
I know.
Hang on, there's a lot to drink in there.
Oh my goodness. So he bought an Astra estate.
Yes.
Picture that.
Yes.
Neil McMillan has bought an Astra estate. He's bought it from a musician.
Yes.
Neil has bought an Astra estate from a musician. What else has the musician been doing that day? He's been selling Terry Nutkins, the otter-baiting, weirdly Harry Metcalf on acid mullet-type hairstyle man.
Well, yeah, who's dead, but yeah.
Yeah, who's dead. So the musician who sold Neil the Astra estate earlier that day sold Terry Nutkins a Subaru Impreza, but the Impreza was for Terry Nutkins' son. And the Impreza, in fact, belonged to the musician's flatmate. I mean,
These stories.
It's a multi-layered story.
That's a proper rabbit warren. So,
really is,
and actually, yeah,
I'd love to know how it came up in conversation, though. Go on. Anyway, yeah, the Astra looks good. I'll give you the money for it. Yeah, okay, thanks very much, mate. Yeah, I'll just tear off the bit on the V5. Yeah, okay, right. Yeah, yeah. You been busy today? I have actually. Yeah, I sold Terry Nutkins a Subaru Impreza. It was it was for his son. Oh, was it? Okay, so you got an Impreza as well? No, it belongs to my flatmate. Oh, okay, good.
Right, Nutkins.
I'll remember that.
Nutkins was totally a Land Rover County guy, pre-Defender. He was totally a County guy.
But he had a lot of fingers mutilated or missing, didn't he, on account of him always radging up otters. So
he got savaged by an otter, or maybe several.
I think he might have struggled with heavy steering.
Oh, so he went for a super light power steering model.
He might have, he had Defenders, and then unfortunately he had to buy...
Had to chop them in when his fingers got chopped off.
Yeah, Series 3 Jag XJ or something.
Oh, yeah.
Light steering. Or
people who are outside of the UK or people that are under 30 years old are going to go, who on earth
who
is Terry Nutkins?
Who the merry fuck is Terry Nutkins?
Terry Nutkins was the sort of like...
Fred Dibner and people found out who he was.
Yeah,
so.
He was like the sort of East London younger version of David Attenborough.
East London, was he?
Yeah, he was from East London, but then he moved his whole family up to the Scottish Highlands when he became a proper naturalist. Was it naturalist or naturist? I always get them wrong.
Oh, I always get those mixed up. Naturalist, I think.
Naturalist. Naturist is where you want to take your clothes off, isn't it?
You're right. Terry Nutkins was born in Marylebone, London. And spent most of his childhood there. He skipped school to spend time with the elephants at London Zoo. Look at that.
I don't talk bollocks. I know what...
Sorry, I wasn't questioning you as such. It's just that it seems it's somehow implausable, but yeah.
Yeah, and then he moved up to Scottishland.
Guess how many children Terry Nutkins had?
Well, I know he had quite successful sperm. I think he... was it five?
Eight.
Eight?
Yeah.
Well, he's driving... Hang on, he's driving around...
Each of them an Impreza.
He's driving around in a Ford Transit Tornado.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 80s, because there weren't really many people carriers in the 80s, were there? You had the
Espace. Do you know what I remembered the other day? The Espace, but they were very expensive. No,
they
do you remember did you remember the Toyota Space Cruiser?
Oh, the Space Cruiser. Yeah, a neighbour of mine used to have one of those. And it had optional electric curtains from memory, which I loved.
Oh, did it? Car or was it JDM?
It probably was JDM because, let's face it, who in England is going to pay extra for some very creepy-looking crematorium curtains?
crematorium
curtains. Yeah, they do look like creepy crematorium. I'm going to shut these curtains and then people are going to die. Yeah, it's just a bit Ted Bundy.
My old geography teacher had a space cruiser as well, Mr. Whedon, which there's one person I know who will be listening to this podcast who will remember Mr. Whedon as well. So, hello, Haz. He had one. And then Witch magazine almost toppled one over, I remember, in the 80s while testing it. It was like a sort of prototype
elk test.
And then sort of went into a big campaign about they were dangerous and they should be recalled or something.
But was the space cruiser, it was 80s, wasn't it? Was it really it's probably quite fashionable now with it squared off.
Yeah, and I think a lot of them are two-tone as well, so they look very sort of, you know.
I think the musician Jarvis Cocker from Pulp used to have one.
Really?
I'm almost...
Didn't he at one point have like a big American station wagon as well? Paris or something?
Well, that sounds very inappropriate.
I know.
Yeah, I think Jarvis Cocker he crushed a hill. I remember reading it. He crushed a Hillman Imp. He had a Hillman Imp for years, and then he'd crushed it into a cube and raffled it off to a fan, and then bore a Toyota, or was it Mitsubishi Space Cruiser or a Toyota? I can't remember.
Toyota.
I'm sure Jarvis Cocker did. I mean, sound like I'm making it up, but I'm pretty sure he had one. I'm typing as I say this, just to confirm that I'm not talking absolute bobbins.
I've just sort of randomly scrolled down Twitter and seen where it stops on the things that people wanted to cover. People are asking questions for which we thank you, and we admire also your optimism that we will answer your questions after the last time we asked you for questions and then didn't do any of them. But there's one here that's quite good. Press car mix-up. Ever had the wrong car delivered for a review or been double booked and had nowhere to keep one of the cars? That's from Triathlete, spelled T-R-Y. Kenny Harris is his actual user handle. And it's just reminded me, because once on a drizzly Friday late afternoon, a Brummy man turned up on my doorstep and went, "Hello, mate, here for the car." And I went, "What car?" He went, "DMG, ZT Estate. Come to get it." And I said, "No, I'm expecting one to be delivered." "Oh, no." So you haven't brought a car then? "No, I've come down on the train."
And, "Oh, no.
There is no car here for you to take away because I believe you're delivering it instead at the factory." And of course, it's Friday afternoon.
Oh, no.
And this obviously is when MG Rover still existed. And it's Friday afternoon at Longbridge and everyone's gone home. And he manages to finally find someone who goes, "Yeah, there is a blue MG ZT sitting outside the press garage." Poor bloke.
Did he have to go and get it?
Yeah, he got the train back to Birmingham. He went and got it.
Oh, no.
Brought it back. And then he came back and he went, and he was a bit grumpy by this point, which is fair enough.
What do you mean a bit grumpy? You know, that's what, like 4 hour round trip?
Yeah, I can't remember why I'd sort of had to say, "Look, I really kind of need the car," but then I realised that he went, "Right, back on the train," and then off he went to the Euston station to get the train back to the Midlands. And then it was only then I realised that night I was driving up north and I could have given him a lift, and I felt like a bit of a shit, but
no.
It was too late. And yeah. But that's the first thing that popped into my head, press car mix-up, when a man arrived to deliver a car, but he'd forgotten to bring the car with him.
Remind me of the question. I don't know if I've got an answer to it.
Have you ever had the wrong car delivered for a review or been double-booked and had nowhere to keep one of the cars?
I've been double-booked and nowhere to keep... Yes, I've been double-booked before. There was a time when I had multiple cars coming. I had about three cars delivered within 24 hours. And
but you've got a drive, haven't you? So you can sort of stash things a bit.
I've got the drive here is quite big. The previous house, the drive wasn't very big. I had to do quite a lot of kind of logistics. I'm trying to think what it was. I remember being given a car and they never collected it. So it was supposed to just be a week's loan, and it went on for about another week. And then I kind of went, "Look, when do you want it back?" And they were like, "Oh, our records hadn't even told us that we still had it." Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I remember when the just before the Bentley Flying Spur came out. Yeah, it was the Spur. They gave me. I said, "Can I drive the outgoing car to remind myself, because it's been a while since I drove it?" And that was the original Spur. It looked like a sort of Phaeton, didn't it? It was a bit Phaeton looking.
Yeah.
And they said, "Oh, well, we haven't really got one. We've sort of got rid of them all." I went, "Oh, that's a shame." And then they went, "Oh, hang on. We've still got a pre-production mule. Do you want us to just drop that off?" So it was brilliant, but they Bentley dropped off this car, and it was really like it looked like it had done 100,000 rep miles, and no one had ever cared about the interior of it. So you know, it obviously had pre-prodded dashboard bits, and it had holes where they'd put diagnostic equipment in it. It felt like a kind of ex-police bought at an auction Bentley Flying Spur. I'll tell you what, though, it drove really well, but I did feel a bit sort of like boy done good, a bit gangster driving around in this slightly grubby, war-torn Bentley. Yeah, I don't know of any others. No. Next one.
I just scroll down, and who should I see pop up here where I stopped? But you, admitting that you were gifted a car, but you can't reveal what it is yet. Are you going to reveal it on your channel, presumably?
I'm going to reveal on my channel. Yeah, I have been gifted a car.
This is the one you sent me a photo of in the week.
There is that
one.
Something
different.
This is something different, actually.
What?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I know. It's one of the very few good news stories of 2020.
Okay, but you're going to...
I'm going to keep it. It's exotic. It's rear-engined.
What?
Yeah. You heard me, Rich. You
oh, hang on. Wait. I think you might have mentioned that this was in the offing. I think I know what it is.
Well,
I'm not going to say because I don't want to spoil your thing. Yeah. I'll move on to another thing.
I mean, it's a shame that it's not a 911 GT3, but, you know.
It's always a shame it's not a 911 GT3. Gareth Saynor has asked, best/worst gifts from car manufacturers at a launch? I think we both missed the heyday of big Blagola.
What, like huge laptops like and stuff and full and ski suits?
Yeah, people used to go to, I don't know, go to South Korea with Daewoo, and they'd be given a laptop in the 90s when laptops were, they were as big as a Daewoo, but they were also 2 grand, yeah, and a bit of a novelty. And I've never been on that many launches, really, and I've always just sort of got, you know, this one where they'll give away a little model of the car, which is nice, you know, and it sort of also doesn't feel too sort of like, ooh, this is grubby. But my favourite...
I got given a tablet.
Did you?
I'm actually looking at it. It's still in the box. It's a Motorola.
Really? Did you?
Yeah, it's a Motorola Zoom.
By who?
Honda, when the first of the Civics that wasn't the spaceship was launched.
Oh, really?
I know that. I'm sure it's got a number and a letter moniker, but I don't know what it is.
Definitely.
It's the first. It's the one that came after the one that hasn't dated at all because it still looks completely futuristic.
Yeah, the one that sort of tried to do the same but just wasn't quite as good.
Yes, that car. Yeah. So it was probably a good decade ago now, maybe. I don't know.
I once went to Germany to drive the Mark 5 Golf. Yeah, Mark 5.
One of my favourites.
And yeah, it was nice. Quite a surprise because after the Mark 4, which was a bit flabby, Mark 5 was pretty good. And we went to Germany to drive it with Andy Morgan, the photographer from Evo. And we went and we did a story for Evo over there, just a first drive. And it was a major thing. You know, we went to Wolfsburg and they'd taken over this huge area of Wolfsburg to do this whole sort of international launch event. But no Blagola, and that's fine. It was like we were there to drive the car, went home. We flew back to Heathrow and our cars were all parked in a hotel car park nearby. When we went back, everybody's car on the front passenger seat, they'd left a little paper bag and it had a model of the Golf in it. Nice. And then it had a bottle of water and a bag of crisps, and it felt like you'd been to a children's party a little bit. It was quite sweet, but I'd never seen that before. I was like,
I quite like that.
Yeah, it was nice, but it's like you've spent probably €1 billion launching this car, building like a, you know, sort of semi-permanent marquees and things like that all around your factory to show off bits of the gearbox. But that means you have no money left for the Blagola, so bag of crisps in a paper bag is what it is. But that was it was quite nice. I'd like that because, again, it just stops you feeling grubby. if they went, and by the way, when you get back to your car, you will find a state-of-the-art laptop and a prostitute in it. And you go, I don't know. But if you just go, look, there's a bag of Walkers. And if you're feeling really guilty, then you could just give them to...
your children,
or something,
or
a flick down again. Mark Jackson asks, good car dash shit engine, shit car dash good engine, discuss.
Good car, shit engine, shit car, good engine.
I'll tell you one that comes a bit close. Good car, shit engine was my first car, Ford Ka. Because yes. lovely chassis, lot to like about the Ka. But
that's a very modern first car, really modern.
I know.
I mean, amazingly modern.
Well, it was it was. I kind of saved up and I didn't need a car until suddenly I did need a car, and then I got a bit of money put by and I bought it was second hand, but you know.
But
I know it's a bit weird, isn't it? I never had an absolute shitter.
Well, you have.
I did later.
Yeah, I was going to say you did the opposite to everyone else. You worked up to a shitter, whereas everyone else worked up to something more modern and reliable.
But yeah, the engines in that were a bit tappity.
They were. I'm trying to think of a car with a lovely engine that was not a very good car.
Oh, I've thought of another one. That Cadillac. STS the North Star V8 and
the 32 valve. Yeah, really good engine for hot rods and stuff.
Pretty piss poor car.
Yes, it was a piss poor car.
The old shape Nissan Micra, which was bit disappointing generally.
And
then I drove, they introduced it later, I drove the one with, the engine had a little supercharger on it. Very little supercharger.
Oh, yeah. I remember reading about that.
It was a good luggy engine, and it really, you know, it sort of, because those micros are quite light, I suppose, and it just clipped along, and it was just a nice engine, just flexible, and it sounded okay and all this sort of stuff. And you just went, oh, it's actually a surprisingly good engine in still quite a dismal car.
Yeah.
So there we go.
A friend of mine bought for about £1,000 2 years ago, what was the sort of, the very dull Corolla body shape, but with a hot engine.
T-Sport.
Yeah, and that, the engine in that is gorgeous and resilient.
Yeah, but it's because it's got a VTEC style cam switchover thing.
It does.
But it happens about 100 revs before the red line.
Yes.
And it's quite nice in... Did you ever try it in the Celica? Remember that last Celica?
Yes.
Nice lightweight Celica, which was a really lovely car, actually. They never got the credit.
They don't have a pedigree, do they, those Celicas?
No, they're great. They're really lovely. I always remember, I like those. Both the engine output.
I remember that Celica because there was a bloke... We featured one in on Revs magazine when I was on Revs, and it was the cover car. And the guy had put 18-inch wheels on it and spent $18,000 modifying it, so it was all about the...
God.
Yeah, so we did a 118-118 themed shoot where, at the time, remember those blokes dressed in bad 70s running shorts and slack vests, and I was dressed up as one of the 118 guys, or 1818 as we would call ourselves. And I only remember this now because I broke my foot on the chute and had to drive. I had to drive home with a broken foot, and I was in so much pain when I got home. I couldn't climb the stairs to go to bed, so I had to sleep on the floor in my own lounge. Yeah. It's amazing what you remember, just because of a Celica. Yeah.
How did you break your foot on the Celica?
Well, we were jogging along next to the Celica, and the photographer was getting us to do the sort of high leg jog, and we were just dicking about. But unfortunately, we were jogging along on the pavement, and I was looking at the camera or the other guy that I was with the bad running shorts on, and when I jogged off the curb without seeing it and rolled my ankle, and I heard my foot go. I made a horrible crunching noise, a bit like when you snap celery. And I kind of went, oh, that hurts. And it wasn't so bad for the next couple of hours, but then it started to just swell wildly. And I drove home, and I was in, was I in a manual? I think I drove home in a manual, and it wasn't great. And then I just couldn't climb the stairs to get to bed. So I slept downstairs with a beach towel. And
oh my god!
And then
this
the next,
miserable.
Yeah, I woke up and basically my foot was about 7 sizes bigger, and it was purple.
Oh
and drove myself to hospital in my automatic Jaguar. And the doctor said, "How did you get to hospital?" I went, "I drove." She went, "You won't be driving home." I said, "Well, I haven't got any options. I've parked my Jag in the car park." So, yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
That's just reminded me of something. When I worked at Pebble Mill. We had, for some reason, we had a Vauxhall Omega press car in, like a 3 litre, one of the late ones, like an MV6 or something.
Oh,
quite nice.
Yeah.
And a colleague and I were going to use it we had to go up to the Toyota factory at Derbyshire because I think we wanted to film something there, so we were going to go to a meeting to talk to them about it. But for some reason, the night before, another guy in the office, my mate Big John, went... I don't suppose I could borrow the Omega tonight because he needed a big car for something with a biggish boot. And I went, well, yeah, you can, but as long as you're back with it, good time in the morning, because I've got to drive it to Derbyshire in it, and we were going to take that. Yeah, no worries. Got to work. There's no sign of him in the office, and I'm waiting. We're due to go, and I was a bit like, so I rang him. I was like, John, come on, mate, you promised. Where are you? And he went, oh, no, it's okay. I was doing some DIY last night. That's why I needed the Omega. I wanted to go and... I think he went to buy some stuff, you know, bits from B&Q or something. I got home, I started, like, sawing stuff, and I've managed to saw through... I think he sawed through his thumb or something.
What?
Yeah, anyway. So, I'm really sorry, but So I had to drive myself to hospital, and I was like, oh my fucking God, how much blood's in the omega? He went, no, don't worry, I wrapped my hand in tea towels, it's okay. I checked, there's no blood in the interior. I went to hospital, and they strapped my hand up, and I think they said he shouldn't drive, but he said, no, I've got to drive, because I've got to drop the car back at the office. And in his wounded state, he drove the omega back to the office and dropped it off that night and left the keys in the office for me. I was like, again... Oh. As soon as I spent this whole podcast describing times when I felt like a bit of a shit, but yeah, because I rang him up in a terse mood, going, "Where's this car, you bastard?" And he went, "Oh, I've sawed through my own thumb.
I've lost my thumb."
Yeah, despite losing like 5 pints of blood, I still took the omega back.
Oh, that's just quite sweet.
Those Corolla tea sets that you were talking about. One of them turned up at the Evo office once, and it was Toyota. They just dropped it off, and they went, "Oh, yes, you can have it as a long term test car." And everyone from Evo took it in turns to drive it around for a bit. And then we had to ring Toyota and go, "We don't want it."
What?
Everyone hated it. Yeah, we hated it so much.
What, because it didn't have anything about it?
Yeah, it was just dismal. It was a really sort of good sort of flabby car.
Actually,
with a really zingy engine. So, yeah, it does fit crap car good
engine. The great engine car that nobody cares about, Mazda MX-3.
Oh.
The 1.8 V6.
Yes.
It's an engine I just want to buy... And just put to one side for something, for a project, for something.
Yeah, just for shiz.
Because it's a lovely, 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 sweet, beautiful, wonderful, lovely little engine. And you just don't
sweet,
get small...
Sweet engine.
You just don't sweet. Get small, big cylinder amounts of engine. Mm. Another engine, which is not actually a car, it's a motorcycle, is the Honda Goldwing engine.
Oh, yeah.
A few years ago when I was at the Tokyo Motor Show, I was transfixed. Six. Yeah, I was transfixed by this. There was a cutaway of it rotating in a glass case next to the bike. I looked at the bike and went, well, it just looks a bit cack to me. You know, it's a bit jingle-jangle. But the engine is absolutely gorgeous and really compact. And yeah. the whole time for the rest of the Japanese show and that night in the hotel, I was thinking about what I would do if I bought one of those engines, what I would put it in. And I've decided I would put it in an old Volkswagen Beach Buggy, because I think it'd possibly be the best engine transplant out there. I've not done it yet, and someone's listening to this and might go, "Well, you should do that."
You've got a Mazda briefcase car to build now, haven't you?
I'm building a Mazda briefcase.
Don't tell me you haven't thought about a replica.
Hang on a minute.
I know you.
Why don't I use the MX-3 1.8 V6? Can you imagine a V6 suitcase? Bloody hell. What a widowmaker. You can turn up at the green hell in it and people will be like, "Oh, I've got my GT2. I'd take your GT2 and I'll raise you. I've got a cycling helmet on and a very large Samsonite that's a V6.
A child cycling helmet. Now, look. Thank you for your questions and your things on Twitter. I'm sorry we haven't really covered that many of them, but, you know, we are... useless, but we do need to talk to people before we finish. We've got to tell people about the thing that we're doing this coming week, which is we are presenting some bits and pieces from Goodwood Speed Week.
Oh yeah,
which starts on Friday the 16th of October, and goes on all weekend. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this week. There's live car racing and all sorts going on.
Exhibition
down at
stuff, yeah. It's like a Goodwood main motoring event, but without spectators. So instead, you just have presenters like us describing and pointing at things.
If you liked our video where we walked around that field of rusty things and pointed at them and talked about them, which is by far the most popular video on the Smith and Sniff YouTube channel, if you liked that, then we're sort of going to be doing a bit of that, but the car's going to be much, much nicer and we probably won't be as rude about them. But we're doing a bit of that, and we're doing a bit of, I don't know what else, chatting about things and intermittently popping up throughout the day. So the whole thing is being live streamed on the Goodwood website, and then highlights of it, which will probably not be our bits because we'll get cut out for being crap, but there are highlights going to be shown on ITV4 across the weekend. I don't know the times because I asked someone to tell me and they didn't, so your guess is as good as mine. Who knows? But we are doing a few bits and pieces, and we're doing a thing to celebrate 50 years of the Range Rover. So yeah,
there's going to be some good cars there too. Oh, it's great. I'm looking forward to that. I'm hopefully driving down in a Lotus.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, if I can.
Nice. Well, that's it for this episode, but thank you ever so much for listening. As always, subscribe and like, or the other way around. We don't really mind, just do it. I have three other things to tell you. One, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It is called The Late Break Show, and it's full of many excellent treats. Electric Land Rover Defenders, your Honda S600. I started watching that video the other day, and then I got rudely interrupted, which was annoying because I was enjoying it.
Well, actually, next the week that this podcast comes out, there'll be something quite special that's electric and off-roady, but it isn't a Defender. It's brand new.
Okay.
It should be quite fun. And right now, there's a faux Ferrari 250 GTO resto model.
That's the new one.
That's just come out.
Yeah. The second thing I have to tell you is that I still have a book out. It's called The Medium-Sized Book of Boring Car Trivia by Sniff Petrol. It's available exclusively on Amazon, and Volume 2 will be with us quite soon, I hope. And the third thing I have to tell you is that The Rock's middle name is Douglas.
Is that true?
Yes, he's called The Douglas Rock.
Dwayne Douglas.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Dwayne Douglas Johnson, yeah.
Johnson. Yeah. It's not massively glamorous, is it?
No.
That's where I'm going wrong. I'd leave my name normal, and I should maybe vamp it up a bit.
Well, just call yourself the rock's taken, I don't know, the stone, the pebble, the gravel.
The gravel.
The gravel. Johnny the Gravel Smith.
Stop it. It just sounds pathetic. Johnny the Gravel. If I was like if I was a rally stage absolute king, guru, then yeah, Johnny the Gravel would be like, oh, right, it's going to be loose surface. The gravel's going to smash this. But I'm not.
You're not.
No.
Oh, well. Anyway, maybe something to aim for. I don't know. All right. Well,
in my Mazda suitcase car.
You just see your V6 powered suitcase on gravel. Jesus Christ. The nickname is because of the gravel rash that is all over your face and body.
I'm going to do Pike's Peak in a suitcase next year.
Peak on a suitcase. The sequel to Across America on a Suitcase with Johnny Smith.
Who needs Charlie Borman and Ewan McGregor on motorbikes when he can have a suitcase car?
They're not trying hard enough, are they? All right, well, that's that for this then. Thank you again for listening. And we will hopefully have your eyeballs upon us later this week at Goodwood Speed Week, Friday, Saturday and Sunday. We'll be popping up intermittently. And don't worry, there's some actual other presenters doing the heavy lifting, but we'll be there at some point. And we'll see you again same time next week, Monday. And thank you for listening again. I keep saying that. I don't know why. Bye.
Goodbye.
Would you like to shake my hand?